from Norwich. It's the quiz of the week.
Hello, it's the Big Show, the show where we talk the big news in tech and where contestants win fantastic prizes. Like things like this. Apple Works 6. You can't get a better thing than this. Oh, this amazing VGA cable.
Not one of those. I've always wanted one of those.
This and internet mouse. All
not.
This four can be won. No, I'm really kidding. I'm really joshing here. It's the Big Show with me, right? He's standing in for the governor. He's got some issues with dealing with the calendar, so I'm standing in. Got a fantastic panel to discuss the week in tech. As always, and because she likes it, Sarah, ladies first, how are you, my lady?
I'm very well, thank you very much. From, I would say, sunny Ireland, but it's been very sunny in the last week or so, but yes, I'm very well, thank you. Been working hard over here.
Oh, it's been a scorcher here today. I got me white t-shirt. I don't know if it comes up. There you go, look at the white t-shirt. Look at that.
Nice.
And next to him, 31st appearance on network, Russ Pitts, former features editor at Polygon. Really impressed. But tell everyone about yourself, sir.
Well, I'm 39 years old. I'm a Capricorn. I enjoy long walks in the woods with my dog. A good cup of coffee, and a fanciful joke.
Ooh, well, we're made for each other, sir.
And I'm also soon to be in an eye of a hurricane. Let me see if you can see the.
Yeah, I saw your tweet. It's mental. Yeah. Oh.
I'm the dot.
How far away is that?
Oh, that's not very far. That's perhaps 200-300 miles, maybe.
Well, less, less than that. If you lose internet connectivity, kind of console yourself with a Xander song.
Perfect. Yeah. You can send me that link, and I'll play it to myself quietly here.
It's going to get remixed after this show, I promise. It will be released. I'll send you a link. Next to him is the Streak Machine, making a welcome return. Hello, sir.
Good evening.
You've had some issues this evening.
Yeah, Google Chrome does not like me, and that's a fact. Apparently, it created something rather hilarious for you to enjoy for a couple of minutes, though, be scared of. I'm at least scared. I fear that I might have seen a few demons of some kind flying outside the window, so don't know what happened there.
The dodgy flying monkey, that's all we need. And my lucky charm, as always, and the lady's favorite, and the one everyone's waiting for, is Mr. Jeff Gamert.
Oh, man, now the pressure's on. I hope I'm not underdressed for the evening.
We hope you are underdressed. I think that's part of the charm, Jeff.
Oh, well, then since the camera doesn't go below the waist, you'll just have to wonder. I can't take the mystery out of our relationship, you know.
Ah, see, all these Patreon things and sponsorships, actually, British Tech Network, all it needs is a premium channel for the camera under the desk.
I've just realized.
Oh, my God. The camera
under the desk. Talking about being underdressed, I've just noticed something. We're all wearing blue.
Oh, my word. Mr. Falk, are you a blue man? Oh, he is!
It's wow! The blue show.
There we go. The blue man group takes on a new form.
Interesting.
I have about 10 different shirts in my closet, and 9 of them are blue. So the odds of this were relatively high, from my point.
Yes. There you go. Color coordinate. That's what we love. So obviously we're here to discuss the week in tech. I'm gonna rush through the week in tech because last time I did it, we had a 2-hour show. Couple of things. Obviously, Virgin Media broadband customers in the UK lost all their broadband. I'm not on Virgin, so I'm not that bothered. The UK is being set up as a test for robotics, apparently. Apparently, we're probably the best place to do it. And Milton Keynes is the number one place to try robotic cars. And I think it's all of those kind of roundabouts that they've got. So, but the one thing I did want to have a quick chat about is Facebook's under investigation for doing psychological tests on us without us realizing. Did anyone hear about that?
Oh yes.
Oh yes.
Do we have a feeling? Do we feel violated?
I often feel violated.
Yeah. Well, I'll take that camera away from underneath your desk then, sir.
Oh well. All right. All right, but the problem that I see is that Facebook probably didn't act in an ethical fashion. I mean, looking at the patterns, at the things that we're doing, the things that we're saying on the network or on their network, they're within the rights to do that based on their terms of service. Conducting experiments that have a direct impact on us without our direct permission, I think that probably crosses over what they're interpreting as acceptable with their licensing agreements into an area that's kind of gray. And I'm betting that the UK starting their investigation is only the beginning. And it wouldn't surprise me if you guys figure out that, oh, yep, they violated this law and this law and this law, and then they get, and then Facebook gets hammered in some way. It won't stop them. They'll just, what they've really learned is they have to be more quiet about conducting these emotional experiments on it.
Yeah, because were they trying to work out what made us happy and sad, weren't they? They were kind of prioritizing posts to make us feel certain ways. Is that and see how we'd react? Is that kind of an advertising thing?
Well, sure, it's for advertising. If they learn more about how to manipulate our moods, then they learn a lot more about how they can effectively target ads to us. And the more effectively they can target ads, the more valuable we are as a product.
Yeah, you're seeing a lot of developments in this particular area, not just in Facebook. American Apparel came out, I think, this past week for performing similar experiments within their stores, attempting to influence shopper behavior. I know we have retailers in the United States here that emit certain scents through the air vents in their stores in order to promote better, more favorable shopping behavior from consumers. I think the overlap, and we're not going to, I think you're right. I think, Jeff, I think you're going to see more movement on this front in Europe and the UK than in the States. We tend to be pretty laid back about the excesses in terms of consumerism. But I think the gray area is when you walk into a retail store and the people who own that store are attempting to influence you to buy things. There's a certain point up to which that's acceptable behavior because you've initiated that transaction by walking into that retail business. On a system like Facebook, the transaction is less clear. We are understanding that we're using the system in certain ways for our lifestyle, for our purposes. Facebook is obviously monetizing it. The ambiguity about how exactly they're monetizing and what they're selling and why and how, and then how they're attempting to influence that by manipulating us, I think creates a lot of opportunities for some potential lawsuits.
Exactly. Because it was...
I think...
Sorry, Sarah, carry on.
No, I was going to say, my view is that there's a sort of smoking mirrors here that we're... As was said, that we don't really know how they're monetizing it. And personally, I mean, my view is that this is a social network. And if I'm, what they actually did was, they, to some people, they actually showed negative posts that people on their timeline were actually posting. On others, they showed positive, and then they observed the posts that people actually posted that were based on what they actually saw. And my view as a Facebook user was, I'm sorry, but I don't like being told what I can and can't see of somebody's feed. I want to be able to see, their timeline. I want to be able to see, what they choose to post. Otherwise, it devalues the content. What's the point of doing it?
Yeah. This was back
The content isn't what matters, though. And I totally get what you're saying. It totally matters to me. Yes, it totally matters to us. But to Facebook, it doesn't matter because that's not the purpose of Facebook. The purpose of Facebook is to sell us
as an advertising organization.
Yeah, and so it totally sucks because we have an expectation from Facebook, and that is completely incongruent with Facebook's expectation of Facebook. And so this is just one of many ongoing fights that we, as users, will have with their service.
I think the other issue is the fact that it was done without us knowing. I know you said just now about the fact that they're going to have to do this a bit with being a bit more secretive about it. Well, I'm sorry, but no, I don't want them to do it at all.
I don't want them to do it at all either. And when I said they need to do it more secretively, I was doing my best to be clever. And yet at the same time, I fear that my interpretation of, you know, which is, well, they'll just have to be more careful next time so we don't find out, may very well be exactly the attitude that they're taking.
Knowing Facebook, that wouldn't shock me.
Exactly. Because this happened back in 2012, didn't it? Did anyone actually notice anything? I suppose a lot of things go through your Facebook feed. Did you notice anything kind of irregular back in 2012 that kind of influenced your mood?
You know, I didn't really spend a lot of time. I actually went back and checked recently. I didn't spend a lot of time on Facebook, apparently. And thinking back, I realized I would spend a few minutes there and get really annoyed and then leave. So maybe, I don't know, maybe.
That's just Facebook.
Yeah, exactly. I like that comment.
I don't trust Facebook, and I'd try and spend as little time on there as possible. And if it wasn't for the fact that there's some people that's the only way I have is staying in touch with them online, I wouldn't have an account there. I would have long gone because I don't trust them at all.
No, the only thing about Facebook is, the thing about Facebook, it makes you hate your friends because you go onto Facebook and you realize they're having a better time than you. That makes me miserable. So if Facebook's aims was to make me miserable, they win.
There was a very interesting post which I picked up, which I read today on the BBC website about how the impact of social networks and bringing things online can have on you in terms of the fact that, you know, when, you know, with your friends and stuff, you don't know how many friends your friends have got, but with social networks, it's completely laid bare, and that can be quite depressing because it seems that in a lot of cases, majority of cases, most people's friends have more friends than they do.
Yeah.
And that can be quite depressing, and therefore that can affect your mood in terms of just by having that laid bare in front of you. It's a really interesting article.
Yeah, no, I think they're playing with us. We know that, but obviously, you know, it is that kind of thing that is a free service, and we become the product, and obviously it will be that thing where it kind of goes to court or whatever, and we've probably signed up in the T's and C's to allow them to do this to us because no one ever reads it, do they?
I think it's acceptable to understand that you are the product, but I think this oversteps the line. I think it's acceptable to work out what you're talking about and therefore target your ads and serve you ads, and that's how that's a good way of making money, and Google have proved that. I don't think doing psychological testing on the users in terms of what they serve up is giving me a fair and balanced view of what my friends are doing if I'm going on Facebook to find out what people are doing.
Yeah,
well, you know, they don't have the right to manipulate that in terms of the mood of the people that are, you know, my friends. I want to see what my friends are doing. And I think the problem is that most people believe that's what they're seeing.
Yeah. Mm. Well, my mum's on Facebook, and some of the photographs she puts online psychologically unbalance me anyway, so I stay away from it.
No. This whole thing has just made me think about one thing I tend to say kind of a lot lately, and it's, we're basically living in a William Gibson cyberpunk novel from the 1980s. I mean, we're kind of there.
Yeah, but it's not the cool version.
No, it's
the version where your mum's on there.
Mm-hmm.
See? Not the cool version.
Exactly. Yep. Okay.
I've managed to get my mum onto Twitter, so that helped my battle in terms of that. We have conversations on Twitter rather than Facebook. Makes life a lot more easier.
Twitter is
awesomely
easier.
Well done.
Twitter is much easier. Is everyone's kind of default social network here? Twitter anyway.
Definitely.
Twitter for me.
Yeah, I think it's because Twitter is that kind of thing where you're only going to say things that you want. You're not going to regret saying, are you? Because you know it's public. There's a lot of things that people put on Facebook because they think they're kind of in this cocoon and they're protected, that they wouldn't say on a more public network, and they just end up embarrassing themselves anyway.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. I trust Twitter. I don't trust Facebook. I don't know. I don't have any reason to think that why I should trust Twitter any more than Facebook, other than the news stories we read about Facebook. But I've never had any reason to doubt that Twitter are serving up to my friends my every single thing I actually post on there if I choose to make it public.
That's the way.
And if I saw anything to the contrary, then I'd be very concerned and probably feel the same way about them as I do about Facebook.
So Twitter is the way forward, then. We agreed?
Well, I think it's a better option.
For today.
Exactly. For that's today. Why I said it's a better option. It's not necessarily the perfect answer.
Oh, well. We learn not to trust, and we don't trust Facebook, so that's always a good thing. So we'll get into the stories. Anyone want to come up first with the story for this week?
I've got a story, but I don't know if you want mine first. I mean, I'm okay going first.
I'm intrigued. Is it kind of spicy little thing I want for later?
it's a matter of perspective.
Okay. We'll as he's on mute, and see if I can wake him up, Mr. Xander, 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 Xander.
Xander, 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 Xander.
Mr. Falk, have you got a story for us then? Because he's always...
I think that it's being a bit spooky with me again. Can you hear me okay still?
We can hear you, yes.
Awesome. I have a very small story. Might even be two stories. But we start with one. A few years back, say mid-early 2000s there, like 2005-ish, in the days before the modern smartphone, if we will, there were these little doohickeys we could put on our bedside tables and it would show RSS feeds. You can have it as an alarm clock and play music and whatnot, called the Chumbi. Anyone remember them?
Oh, yes, I do.
I forgot about that.
Oh, my word. God.
Yes, it's back. A new company has taken over the service, like the server backbone, shall we say, of the Chumbi thing as a whole. And they're all now back up and running again, and there's apparently 1,000 apps available for your Chumbi of choice, if you still own one, have it running and available. So far from dead, technology from the past keeps living, keeps ticking today.
Oh my word, the Chumbi. Everyone, yeah. Smile for the retro Chumbi.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, I just stumbled across this, and whoa, the Chumbi, that's a name you haven't heard for a while.
Oh my word, yeah. Oh, and you can pay for it now as well.
Yes, it's now a paid service, $3 per month, but no, if you still like to see your RSS when you wake up, or still use your Chumbi as an alarm clock for all, why not? It might be worth it.
So what was why did it kind of disappear into obscurity in the first place? Is that because of smartphones? Because obviously
I would assume so, logically, at least. I mean, smartphones really exploded after 2007 there with both the iPhone and the Android handsets, primarily.
Because is everyone like me where your smartphone is next to you, like on your bedside table when you go to sleep at night, and your wife moans at you because it buzzes? Yeah.
I turn mine off every night.
Oh, do you?
My iPhone's never shut off, and it's by my bed when I sleep at night.
I know I'm very much the exception, but I just figure that, one, I don't want to be disturbed if my mobile rings, because anyone, if it's an important call, family related, is like, is going to ring my landline. And secondly, it's an opportunity to not run the battery down. So even if I'm not charging it, which half the time I am, I've still got the phone switched off.
Now, so I don't have a landline
across the room, specifically so it won't wake me up, but we have we get weather alerts on our phones. I don't know if this is worldwide, but we get them on our phones here in the States, and I'm making light of the hurricane we're about to get later today, but we do actually have pretty severe weather where I live. This actually prevented us from being caught unaware one night, so I was very grateful to have it around.
Is that standard built into your carrier, is it?
I believe it is. Yeah, I believe it's carrier by carrier. But I know that I think it's across carriers with everyone who has an iPhone can get the alert.
It's something that all the carriers are required to provide, and there's been a rollout phase. So I think it's available across pretty much every carrier in the United States now. It was great for me over the last couple of years when I was living in the mountains, because I get alerts about the forest fires as they kick up around me, and then when we had that big flood that ultimately is the reason I'm not living in the mountains anymore.
Yes.
We were getting all of, up until all the cell towers conked out, we were getting updates, so we knew, well, what we could see outside the window, which is that we were pretty much screwed. But it can be really helpful.
Yeah, no, I think if you've got that extreme kind of weather, because it in the UK, we just get, yes, the weather's crap, and it's going to be warm today, and you Brits are going to moan about it being too hot. Can we moan when it's too cold, and we moan when it's too hot? And if we didn't have anything to talk about but the weather, we'd have nothing to talk about. I think Sarah would agree with me.
It does seem to, and it's the same in Ireland as well, by the way. There's an obsession of talking about the weather over here as well.
Yeah. Is that an America thing? Because we go, oh, it's a nice day today, or the weather. It's always the first thing in the UK. It's the first thing. Is that the same in America? You always comment on the weather, or is it kind of, oh, Jesus Christ, there's a hurricane coming along? Is that kind of part of the psyche that the first thing you speak to anyone about is the weather?
In my experience, yeah. I mean, generally, if you have nothing else to talk about, there's always the weather to comment on, and I've tended to live in places where the weather can change fairly extremely, so that's always a good topic of conversation. You know, it's 100 degrees Fahrenheit today. Oh my goodness, big wind we got there today. Big wind, yep, big wind.
Big wind. That's the way it is. So would we go back to the Chumbi? Would anyone fancy swapping their smartphone, for a little bedside Chumbi again? Is it too little too late now with the dawn of the smartphone?
You know, for some people, I could see where that would be a cool thing, because they could get that information fix they want and not have their smartphone in the room with them.
Mm. Exactly. And the divorce rate will go up by God knows how much. Because I wake up in the morning, my wife goes, your phone beeped 17 times last night. And I'm like, I'm really sorry, because obviously I'll put it on silent, it'll still buzz. Obviously, because I talk to people around the world, people who are awake when I'm asleep will always kind of buzz me in the middle of the night. So I've literally chosen to have my phone away from my bed now, because my marital state is kind of in trouble if I don't. But then I'm quite active online, so... But they look like a pretty nice device, don't they? You know, do you know about prices?
Cool when they came, I mean, almost groundbreaking back then. Not really state of the art, but they were little interesting pieces of technology, definitely. Especially after they came up with the touchscreen variant.
But then I'm looking at $100 for a Chumbi Red.
Mm-hmm.
And then that
it's not free.
No, but then obviously you can look at, you know, maybe 3 or 4 years ago where, you know, your premier smartphones were $300, $400, $500, and you've got $99 Chumbi now, but you've got Windows phones and things that are kind of in the same ballpark. So would people actually be thinking, actually, I'd rather get the phone than the Chumbi? Because as I'm just looking at the chat room here, and people are going, Chumbi, how do you spell that? You know, obviously, it's kind of, for us nerds, it's kind of a thing where we kind of remember it. It has passed a lot of people by. So do you think that by reviving it, they're going to be successful? Or do you think it's just kind of last attempt to kind of buy the name and just see what they can do with it? Because I'm surprised they bought the name and nothing new with it, because all they've done is revitalize the old product. They haven't done anything kind of new with it. There are some apps on it and things, so I think it's Netflix and that sort of stuff. But they're not actually doing anything kind of new. But yeah, good luck to them.
Mm. I would just like to see some new, preferably cheaper hardware. That would be pretty cool. Mm.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting opportunity for a low-end market there. Parents who would like to buy their children some kind of device, but not necessarily an iPad or an Android tablet with an open marketplace, or you know, something I'd buy for my grandparents who might want to check email in bed but don't necessarily want to get involved with a higher-tech device. I think that's where they're going to see the biggest penetration on with this device, but it's a little too costly for that right now, I think.
Yep.
Yeah, I think for that sort of, that kind of bedside device, that's probably quite a good thing, because you can, I suppose you can tailor it with the apps and things, because it's a My Chumby thing where you can create channels and things like that. So, you could kind of customize it. If you're a kind of, and obviously being a parent, I've never had a lay-in for the last 11 years. But it would be nice to be able to get up in the morning and just kind of lean over and just scroll through the things with one eye open and that kind of thing, because I think if you get your phone out with all the apps you have on your phone, you might get too engrossed in things.
Oh, why bother? Just get Google Glass, stick it on your face when you take it off the bedside cabinet, and put it on when you get up, when you wake up in the morning, and you can do it while he's lying in bed.
That's divorce for me, Sarah. That is divorce. If I get a bit of Google Glass on, I is it?
No. I didn't say, take it off like a pair of glasses, put it on the bedside table when you go to bed, and when you wake up in the morning, even before Mrs. wakes up, you can just put it on. No. And away you go.
No. No. Angle it, so it gets a full view of the bed and really up that paranoia factor.
I think actually...
Yeah, what could possibly go wrong?
Yeah. No, my obviously, because being into tech and obviously working in tech, my wife kind of gets the kind of be all and end all of tech. She also works at the same place that I do, so she gets it double-barreled. I think she actually has a bag hidden in the house with all of her kind of valuables, and the day I come with Google Glass, she'll open up a cupboard, grab that bag, get in the car, and she's gone. She will not take that. I'm my limit of tech. I've got 12 computers in the house, Xboxes, iPhones, iPads. If I bring one more bit in, that is it. That's the tipping point.
It's not specifically Google Glass that we're talking about. It's just the next piece of tech.
I am at my red level of tech now. Any more tech puts her over the edge, she's gone. So no, that's why I'm so low tech on all of my special effects nowadays. Because anything like that, no, she's off.
If you did like Mr. Rankin, she'd be gone.
Oh, I'd never get away with that. This is bad enough. lock myself in a room for a couple of hours on a Thursday evening. So no. But no, it is great to see an old product back. I'd completely forgotten about it. So no, good luck to them giving it a go. I might hassle them for a review unit to see if we can give it a go. So a good story. Thank you very much. Russ, sir, as you the new boy on the network, give you a.
That's a little too long a title for me. You can just call me Russ, or the new. I like that.
I'm imagining it's just having walks through the park now. I've got this kind of blurry image, just walking, holding hands in the park. But anyway, sir, before we carry on, have you got a story for us, sir?
I don't. I've been, writing all week, to be honest with you. I apparently have no job anymore, so I've been head down creating content, hopefully to sell to someone. But I'm happy to interject worthless commentary on any story that you provide.
We are more than happy for you to that, sir. That is what we're all about. it's throwing me right off now. Jeff, I need your spicy story.
All right, so my story, here's the spin on my story. Any technology that we develop will eventually be twisted into something that we can use sexually. And I know, crazy. And I stumbled across an article earlier this week about how that's being done in a very big way, or depending on the guy, in a small way, with the iPad. And
No, you're gonna say what I think you're gonna say, aren't you?
I'm gonna say exactly what you think. Oh no. There's a company called Fleshlight, and they made an adapter for the iPad so you can have sex with your iPad.
Did you see the advert? Put it on.
I actually saw that too.
I have links. Here is the website to show that this is legit. And the article that I found.
Oh, I love you, Jeff.
Was here. And I'm like, really? This is for real? And I kept checking the dates to see if this was like an April Fool's joke thing. But no. It's a mount for your iPad so that you can mount your iPad.
I did say that I went to like three websites after that to make sure it wasn't a joke. And it's real, isn't it?
And it's totally real. And so now you can look at whatever it is that that you need to look at and mount a fleshlight on your iPad and a fleshlight. And I know all this stuff now because I was trying to sort out if this is real or not.
How's your review unit?
You know, you are not the first person that's asked me that. And I'm thinking, if I did, how do you tastefully review this? And that might
there
actually
be a challenge. There isn't a way, Jeff. There isn't a way.
There isn't a way. Okay, but wow. For those of you that are like, I don't understand, a fleshlight is a prosthetic vagina. And it's life size, so you can dip your wick, so to speak, without... without having to need anyone else present. And now you can put it on your iPad, and well, I guess that's just what they call a sure thing, isn't it?
And I guess they're shaped vaguely like a flashlight. That's the stick. This is actually the Wright Brothers Memorial, but if you imagine this as being round... imagine this as not being a replica of a monument to the discovery of flight, and instead being round and a masturbation tool. It's vaguely fleshlight shaped, right?
This would be the
business end. And then I don't know what happens here in this analogy. I've kind of run out of gas on that.
That's all right. We can throw a mullet analogy in there too. You know, like business in the front, party in the back, or something.
That's right. That's right. The party happens here. Wait, which is the business act? Is the business is also the party? So that's where it falls apart for me.
Does it actually have the official made for iPad sticker on it?
I don't think Apple wouldn't endorse that.
Yeah, I have to agree with Sarah there. I don't think that that'll be accepted in the program for some reason.
Yeah, I'm not seeing anything that says that Apple's on board with this.
Yeah, for those who have seen the advert, how inappropriate is the advert?
It's relatively tasteful as far as advertisements.
As tasteful as an advertisement.
Yeah. It's just a dude who goes, put it on, and he's like, wait, bang, isn't he? He's like, I'm away.
Well, he's FaceTiming or video chatting with his lady friend. They're apparently in different places, and they chat for a bit. And then, you know, I can't remember exactly how it goes. He asks her to take her shirt off or something like that. Or no, she has a gift from him. That's a bit of lacy lingerie.
I love you, babe.
And he says, "Put it
on."
Yeah, and she says, "Well, you want to put it on right now?" I says, "Oh yeah, put it on right now." And that's where we get to the best part of the advert, as far as I'm concerned, because he just immediately—he's a relatively cool guy up till that point, but then she leaves to go put on the thing, and he just the switch flips for him, man, and he's like laser focused, grabs the fleshlight iPad case, and he's there, and he's ready for it, right?
That was like that's like a Jedi with a lightsaber. He's literally like, "He's a warm, really? It's straight in, isn't it?" But he had it ready.
Yeah, he was waiting for it. He planned it. You know, he orchestrated the whole thing. Apparently, again, like a Jedi, two steps ahead.
But they didn't go to the bit that's afterwards because obviously, I have seen the advert. Sadly enough, it's two grips. it's two grips, isn't it? And then they get, you know,
sometimes you need some leverage. Am I right?
Well, you know, two-handed. Anyway. But the poor girl's gonna see this FaceTime video of up and down, up and down, up and down, and this bloke just pulling a funny face. And is that the way we're going? Is that really?
It's a sad state of affairs if that's the case.
I
weep for mankind.
I want to be in the room when they show Tim Cook that advert. I'd love to be where he just goes, what the... Jesus Christ!
Yes. Someone will be flying out through the window and they will not even bother opening it beforehand.
You'll never see him again. If you look at technology, though, and Jeff mentioned this at the very beginning of this tale, you look at technology, most high technology has been advanced and in a lot of ways innovated through the sex industry. VHS tape is not even the star of that list, but it's a very prime example of it. What makes the Apple devices kind of an aberration in that respect is that they've been relatively clear of sexual uses, or they've been very adamant about trying to keep them clear. I know they haven't entirely been successful. So it's very rare. I mean, there have been actually covered for the Escapist, escapistmagazine.com several years ago, a slew of iPad and iPod-related devices that that were designed with sexual uses in mind. It's been interesting to see how to what lengths they would be willing to go to try and keep the aura of the iDevices sort of clean of sexual uses. But this is inevitable, and I think it's not going to change or stop. What kills me about this particular case is just that the two handles and how heavy duty it seems to be. It seems really unlike, you know, you put it on an iPad, which are relatively elegant looking devices, and you put this thing on it, and it's like the character of the whole thing has changed. It's much like a bar when the lights dim and it's close to closing time.
Well, the only thing I can think about with the two grips, well, I don't know if you have it in America, I know that workmen have them. It's like a two grip thing where you kind of bang something into the ground to make a hole, and they're like, whoa, whoa, like that. And it's very similar to that. And I was like, I don't want that sort of action in my area, put it that way. And one thing, the obviously all iOS devices are very wipe clean friendly.
Oh, that's a really important point. So that oleophobic coating is good for more.
Yeah, exactly.
For wiping my tears off when I weep for mankind.
We sort of mentioned that in the review.
What's the world? What is the world coming to? That's all we need to say, isn't it? I'll be asking for review units. Yes. What's their email address? Yes. Send me one of those. I'll let you know how it goes. If not for testing the press flight to knock a hole in my garden to put my greenhouse up. Anyway. Sarah, young lady, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Please save us.
my story is very boring in some ways, but I think for some of this country, it will be quite an exciting story, and it certainly impacts me, which is one of the reasons I picked it. The Irish government this week announced a broadband rural rollout program spending 500 plus million euros. Now, in itself, I think, yeah, okay, we've heard this before, like we hear it in the UK. But one thing that makes this really different is the fact that they're actually not using the state telecom provider, like we are using BT in the UK. They're actually using a mobile phone provider and the electricity network to use the pylons and poles and stuff like that to help speed up getting the getting high-speed broadband out. And we're talking fiber out to rural areas. And they're talking that within the next 3 years, we're going to be able to get 1,000 towns online where they weren't able to do that before. And I just think this is amazing story. It's just you thinking about using a different way of doing it, as in using power network, rather than everyone just thinking, okay, well, that means we've got to use the existing telecoms provider. Well, no, you don't. And the thing that made this interesting was that also they had to justify to the European Commission that this was a need that was going to be, I can't remember exactly what the rule was, but it was something along the lines of they had to prove to the European Commission that it was, it's a gap that couldn't be provided by the private sector. So it was, I just think it's a different way of looking at actually solving what is an essential problem.
Well, they've always, yeah, with all sorts of kind of broadband rollout, it's always been kind of in the urban areas, hasn't it? It's always kind of like 4G, 3G was urban areas, 4G was urban areas, and it's always the people who out in the sticks that always get the kind of short end of the stick.
Yeah, exactly. Out here, we are. I mean, I am in a town, but it's very much in a rural part of Ireland. And we've got broadband, obviously, otherwise we wouldn't be able to do the show. But it's nothing compared with what we've got in England. And they're talking that by the time these programs are finished, that the rural areas will actually do have better broadband than the urban areas, which is completely turning it on its head.
Yeah, because there's a lot of stories about people doing it themselves, aren't they? Because of there's been no initiative to kind of do it. There's going to be these kind of, I can't remember what they call it. It's a community broadband, isn't it? Where they're kind of digging in their own lines, aren't they?
Yeah, I've read a couple of stories in the UK of where people, where they live in the countryside and they want it. So they'll actually get together with a group of residents in their area and basically finance the fibre actually being rolled out to them, which is a great way of doing it. But it's just over here, there doesn't, in the rural areas, it doesn't seem to be the need. But I think the Irish government have realised that, yeah, okay, it's all very well talking about it. And this is not the first time they've talked about it, but they've actually said, okay, no, we're going to get really serious about this and we're looking at future-proofing it. And we just want to get on and do it because we realise that it's actually holding the country back.
Yeah, well, it seems quite crazy because, like, you know, compared to our friends over the pond, our country is kind of minuscule in size. What are the kind of challenges that are kind of in the States, you know, of kind of getting to rural areas? What sort of solutions are they kind of putting in place to kind of get the broadband? Is it more kind of wireless technology, or is it digging trenches and putting fiber in? Is that the way they're going?
You know, I'd say from what I've seen, it's a similar issue. We have a sort of unique situation in the States, with particularly with fiber rollout. We have what we call the last mile problem, where there is fiber rolled out to a lot of various communities by the major telecoms, but for various reasons having to do with either monopolistic tendencies or government regulation, they've resisted laying fiber the last mile from the main pipeline to actual houses. I actually have that right here. I watched them roll the fiber out along the main road. That's at the end of my street. And I can walk down the street and I can put my finger on where the fiber terminates at the beginning of my subdivision here. But it doesn't actually come to my house, and I can't convince anyone to run it to my house. That's one problem we have. There are also very deep rural areas where they have nothing, so they turn to satellite as a big solution out there.
Yeah, we have the same problem where it's fiber to the cabinet, but it's still copper to the house. So you're not actually getting the full capacity. Obviously, copper has so much capacity, but obviously it gets to the cabinet at the end of every road in the UK. But yeah, there's no kind of definite rollout to all houses to get the kind of the full capability of the broadband, is there?
And I found there was actually a benefit of doing that, though. I know it's not ideal, and we would all like it to be fiber to the house, but in the UK, where my house is in the UK, the box, I can see it from my house. It's literally about 20 yards away, and when they actually put fiber in, they realized they actually had to improve the copper because there were problems in it, that the speed of the fiber actually showed up, which previously it hadn't showed up. So they came in and they ripped out a lot of the copper wiring and replaced it. Okay, it was still copper wiring, but it was obviously newer and it was therefore better quality, so we got better speeds.
So what is the solution? Is digging up roads and putting the fiber in, or is the solution putting in better kind of wireless technologies? Because obviously that doesn't require the kind of, I know in the States they've got better kind of 4G and things that we have over here, because we're still kind of in the infancy of 4G. Is that the way that they're kind of looking in the States to kind of look at more wireless technologies than digging up roads, because obviously you've got huge land masses to cover? Is that the kind of, because obviously you've got Google.
Yeah, it's kind of a mix. I mean, you have Google doing their fiber rollouts in several cities, and then you have some cities or towns that are doing their own. And there's a town that, from where I'm right now, if you look that way, see right over there, it's called Longmont, and Longmont is doing a municipal fiber rollout, and so they're turning internet into a utility in their town, and it's all going to be high speed, and I believe you have the option that they'll do fiber to the house, And I think you have to pay them an extra fee to make that happen. But everything else is fiber just being laid out, and it's just part of what your city taxes are going towards.
Yeah, I'm not going to really go into it, because I know on this network it was a bit of a contention. And I know in certain European countries that they are looking at kind of broadband as being a utility. Do we believe that that should be kind of? I can't remember where it is in the EU, but it's a human right to have a broadband connection of a certain speed. Do we believe that is a right now, that to have that connection now?
It needs to be seen as utility, and I wish that the EU certainly would make it not a human right, but it needs to be seen in the same vein as electricity and water, because we are so dependent on it as a society now.
Yeah, because my dog gets homework, and it's like, look at this on the web. And it's part of her homework. And if she didn't have the internet, she couldn't do her homework. It's like, well, she's being disadvantaged by not having internet. And obviously we had a standard of internet. Obviously, when I started doing these shows, I've now upgraded to fiber now and that sort of thing. But I think it should be that I know the government are doing like certain things that allow people to have a certain standard of internet. But it's crazy in the UK for a small country, as small as we are, because you know, roll us into the States. You know, I don't know how many times the UK rolls into the States, but the fact we're still not at a kind of decent level of internet across our country is shocking.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the issue here though is it's such an important issue, is that you know most countries are looking at it. Oh well, we've got to upgrade the existing infrastructure. Why not think of it a bit like this? Like Ireland are doing here with this story, and the reason I mentioned it was because they're looking at other ways of actually solving the problem. They're not just saying, okay, well, we've got to use the telecoms. Right. Well, I remember reading a story a while ago, and I can't remember where it was, where I was just been having a look, see if I could find it, about a revolutionary way of doing it, of using underground pipes, not just, you know, what are used for, you know, telecoms and stuff, but where it would become so easy to lay this pipe in a much easier way than it was before. I wish I could find the story, because it was great, and I haven't seen anything about it. It must have been about a year ago. It must have been, you know, it was a great way of doing it, but for some reason we haven't heard anything more about it. But I think it's so important that the governments have got to think about other ways of doing it, and it might be that you know, like Google are doing, or that we spend money on public Wi-Fi, municipal Wi-Fi, like there are places in Swindon are doing it, for instance, in the UK. It's so important to be able to get that out, that I think we can't just stick with what we've got, because yes, if you're doing it in exactly the same way as you're doing it now, yes, there are issues, which I think obviously BT are finding, and it increases the cost. But if we can find other better ways of doing it, then it will actually make a huge difference and get it done a lot quicker.
Yeah, no, the investment should be there. Is that's the thing? Yeah, it is a thing that everyone needs, and without especially with the kind of UK government and the services that they do, a lot of it's online now. Tax returns, child benefit, all that sort of thing. It's all online now, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you're majorly disadvantaged if you haven't got access to not just to online services, but to, you need broadband to be able to do a lot of things.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I remember that when I met my wife many years ago, when we moved in together, I got broadband straight away, and she's never experienced kind of home internet before, and she's always had, obviously we're on the kind of, you know, the basic 56 internet. It was a basic broadband. I remember she went to her parents' house about a week later, and they were on dial-up, and she went, what the bloody hell is this? Because she'd never experienced it. They kind of haven't unplugged the phone and plug it back in. But there are actually still people who actually haven't unplugged their phone, plug into dial-up, and you know, in 2014, that's just almost a shocking experience.
I'll tell you one thing that was really interesting for me, was to see how my nephew and niece are so dependent on the internet. When the internet goes out, they go crazy. It's just, they live their lives on the internet. And this was, until a year or so ago, this was a complete revelation for me. I had no idea that they were so dependent on it.
No, there's a solution for no internet. There is. It's called Looms. This is the UK's going crazy for looms. The kids are all doing it. They're making blooming looms.
You know, one of my nieces is so into the loom thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, she made me it's like little rubber bands that get woven together, right? Yeah, she made me a bracelet a few weeks ago.
Yeah, you know, 2014, someone worked out a way to make rubber bands profitable. And I have spent about 70 quid on looms in the last month. I'm buying elastic bands at 70 quid a go. But she's not on the internet, so there is hope for all of our children. Elastic bands.
You know, internet would be cheaper. Just saying.
Pretty good connection, too.
That's a great story, Sarah. Thank you ever so much.
So, yeah, great hope for Ireland.
Well, there you go. And Norfolk. Remember where I am. You know,
That's true. Maybe the Norfolk County Council needs to look at doing the same sort of thing.
Yeah, you look back through the tweets today, what people are saying about where I come from. Jesus Christ. I ride around on oxen, apparently, every single day. But we won't go into that. But anyway, by popular demand, and you remember these, because this show and all the other shows on the network could not be supported without my little drawings, UK2.net. Do you remember these?
Yes, we do.
That's awesome.
Thing is, the worst thing about this is I put these in the recycling the other day, and Ewan came back last night and said, can you do the show? So I was like, head into the bin last night pulling these out.
You should never throw them away, Paul. You never know when they might be useful.
I shouldn't have done it, but obviously they pick up all the bandwidth for the shows. They do everything for us. If you want anything, kind of VPS, VPN, domains, anything like that, then get in touch with UK2 because they're brilliant. Go to the sponsors page on the British Tech Network page and it's got the sponsors link, and they've got all sorts of discounts for you. They're absolutely brilliant. I had a really big problem because I tried to register a .UK thing this week, and it's really weird, these .UKs. It's got a really kind of convoluted way that you have to register. You have to put your exact contact detail for your .co.uk. But they helped me all the way through. They're absolutely brilliant. And help them because they help us. Next thing is the Network Union, because they're great. And the greatest thing about the Network Union is Rob, I think I've mentioned before, he's a Norfolk boy. He lives up the road. So I'm going to have a drink with this boy. They provide all the internet into the BTN towers. They do a fantastic job of giving us all the lines so we can all the shows. Obviously, it's a bit more professional when Ewan does his stuff than when I do my stuff. You know, you can see here that I probably need a little bit more help. But they're a BT...
graphics rock.
they're a BT business partner, and they'll help you with all your kind of stuff. I'm not a business kind of broadband kind of guy, but if you are, then give them a ring. They will sort you out. And most importantly, and I'm sad to say, Sarah's not coming. It's the bash.
No, I'm not.
It's about 10 days away now.
It is, 12th of July.
It's 12th of July, yeah. I'm on a 5 a.m. train out of Norwich up to Birmingham to help Ewan set up, starting at 10 to get everything set up. And we'll be getting everything ready for everyone to start at 11. Jeffrey Jim in the chat room, my mate, my drinking partner's coming up with me, and we'll be getting there, getting everything ready for everyone. And we're going to miss the curry on the day before, but there are only a few tickets for the curry left. I think they're kind of like 8 or 9 left. So get to britishtech.com/bash tickets. You get your curry tickets on there. You can get your bash tickets on there. It's probably the best day you will ever have. Not because I'm there, just because it's a great day. And last but not least, and getting thing. And I love this one because my little girl drew this, our Patreon little thing. There you go. It's our little thing. If you like what we do and you want to subscribe to us, if you think what we do is worth $1 a month, then go to patreon.com/BritishTechNetwork and give us $1 a month if you think that the Gamer Show, the Pocket Show, Big Show, Mac Show, all the things we do worth $1 a month. It helps improve the studios, the things we do. Yes, this doesn't look that professional. I will get better. I do promise. I will get better, honestly. But there are all the people who support us, so we hope you support them. I didn't do a story this week because I realized that my story was kind of a rant from what I did last week about the Android Wear, and I got a bit, I may have got a little bit kind of passionate about it. So I was going to put into a question, which was, obviously, the Android Wear was kind of a, it's just an extension of the phone. And this week, Microsoft have been rumored to be doing a wearable. And it's going to be kind of more for fitness and that sort of thing. But I was just wondering, in a line, what would people want from a wearable? Just what you'd actually want. If Google Glass seems too cumbersome. Android Wear seemed just like pointless. I just wondered, if you had a wearable, what would you want it to be?
What you mean? What sort of device, or yeah, what would you want to actually do?
Well, either or, because I'm really torn on the wearables thing. I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing. Like the Android Wear thing at I/O last week had me kind of thinking, it's just my phone telling me not to pick my phone out of my pocket. Is there anything that actually a wearable could actually do for us? And does anyone have any desire?
When I see most of the things that are being advertised or suggested as wearables, the first thing that comes to mind is not how amazing the technology is. What comes to my mind is those. I grew up in the 1980s, so we had. I had one at one point. A lot of kids I know had the rectangular Casio watches with the digital display and the little keypad where you could type in, like a calculator where you could type in things on your watch, so you wouldn't actually need to reach into your book bag for
Casio
your,
data
for your calculator. You could actually just, you know, if you need had a math problem, if you're walking down the street and a math problem suddenly leapt out of the bushes at you, you could immediately brandish your Casio and at that problem and solve
no,
it
you,
right
you put,
then and there.
You
to
put
be
boobs,
fair, that
boobs
a lot
in, didn't you? Boobs.
That's right.
That's all you do.
Yeah, you said boobs.
Yeah.
So when I see those smartwatches being marketed, I don't think high tech. I think old, really kind of obnoxious tech.
Thank you.
If I have a wearable, I want it to be something that's in some way fashionable and interesting. I'm not going to put something on my body just because it's a piece of technology. And perhaps that makes me vain, you know, when I go to buy a pair of eyeglasses at the optometrist, there's a wall of hundreds of options that I can choose from, and I have the availability of, I have the luxury of being able to pick the one that I think suits my face best. When you look at smart devices, you get one, right?
Yeah.
You say, well, is this the one I want? Well, it is, because it's the only one I think until wearables, and I realize we're at the beginning of the evolution of this technology, so it may be a bit to ask, but until the technology catches up with the sort of variety of options that people tend to demand when it comes to things they wear on their bodies, I don't think it's going to be a very good sell.
It's like a step backwards, doesn't it? It's kind of like the watch. It's like,
well, you say that. I mean, when I think about it, from what Russ was saying about, you know, being fashionable, I think if I could think of the perfect thing, it would be a computer on my wrist that I can take in the same way that you can with a, you know, the computer, the actual main part of the watch. You can say, okay, well, I want that wrist strap on it. So I can pick the watch face and I can pitch. But essentially, it's the same computer. You just plug that bit into the square, round, whatever part that you're going to attach to your wrist. And I want it to look like a watch, but I want it to be a fully functioning, voice-activated computer.
Mm.
So it can do everything. And to me, that's perfect. I don't want anything else attached to me because it feels like I've got wearing an electronic tag.
Yeah,
I'll
exactly.
Anything else, if it's around my neck, if it's around my, you know, tummy, around my ankle or anything, I'm going to feel like I'm wearing something that I shouldn't really be wearing.
Yeah, it's just my point that in this day and age, are we really taking this retro step that we're kind of looking at whole technology and make it look good? I know you could say, like, with the iPhone, it was kind of, you know, it was looking at smartphones in the time and making it better. But looking at the watch and going, someone correct, how old is the watch? How old is the watch?
Well, I saw an exhibit at the British Museum in London fairly recently about the history of the watch, and I don't remember any of it. So I know it was at least 100 years old. So, yeah. The Great War was the origin of the wrist. Slightly before the Great War was the origin of the wristwatch. So you can start there.
Yeah, but so why try to make that a new technology? Because, you know, obviously I'm a parent, and I send my daughter to school every day. There is not a single child wearing a watch. What would make any child or anyone really think that I'm going to start wearing something on my wrist? There isn't really any... How does anyone here tell the time?
I look at my iPhone. I still wear a watch. I'm not wearing it right now because I tend to wear it most of the time
You're elegant, Sarah. That's why.
I just go out on the nearby field and stare up at the sky. If there's darkness, it is night. I should sleep. If there's sun, I approximate roughly the time.
And you've got a big clock behind your head as well.
Well, that too.
You know, wearable tech for me shouldn't look like I'm wearing tech.
Exactly.
And I don't want people like the Bluetooth headsets for smartphones. I will not wear them because I don't want to have this thing sticking out of my ear where it's obvious that I'm wearing a Bluetooth headset. I think that makes people look like douches. I don't like it at all. So what I wear for my wearable tech is my Fitbit. You know, it goes in my pocket, it can clip on this little belt thing, and it's hidden under my shirt, and it collects information about me that I'm interested in. And that's what I want in my wearable tech. I want to be able to collect information, whatever that information is, that is of value to me. And right now it happens to be health and fitness. At some point down the road, there may be some other type of information I think is important for me to collect.
Does that work for you? Because I was going to buy a Fitbit Flex.
I love it.
Is it good? Because WWDC was coming up, and I was like, I won't buy a Fitbit Flex because Apple might announce something, and they didn't, and I still haven't. Is that a good bit of tech?
I love the Fitbit, and I have the Fitbit One, and before that, I had the Fitbit Ultra. And when I lost my Fitbit One last fall, I went 3 days without it before I was like, screw this, got in the car, drove over to the Apple store and bought a new one.
Really?
And yeah, it's for me to not have a Fitbit with me, I feel very naked. And I'm the guy that goes around without pants on.
Damn. So I'm 80. I'm 80.
That's really telling.
Yeah, that's really telling.
I'm 80 quid down already tonight. I'm going to have to buy one. So, and considering your story, Mr. Gamut, was about wearable tech.
Oh, my God. I had wearable tech for my story today. You're absolutely right.
Oh, hey. And I'll throw it there because, moment. How do you clean that thing?
I don't know. I'm assuming that if you get one of these, it comes with an instruction book. I don't know. Maybe there's a plug in the end you unscrew so you can pour it out. I don't know.
That's the business end. Yeah, maybe.
So press@fleshlight.com, review unit, subject, yes. Okay. I'll let you know.
Dishwasher safe. That's why I review.
Oh, dishwasher safe. There you go.
Because that's what I want to see in the dishwasher. Oh, wait. No, I don't.
No. Remove items first. Well, that was some fantastic stories, everyone. Thank you very much. And probably the most important thing of the big show is, has anyone got any cool thingies? We'll start with ladies first, because Sarah likes being ladies first.
Okay. Might regret this.
You got the fleshlight.
Sorry?
The fleshlight. Yes, you've got it.
No. Why would I have that?
Because you're a very polite host. I don't know.
Well, yeah, okay. Mine is I thought, hang on a minute. I was doing a show last week. It was a help show, and a question came up, and I talked about this particular piece of software. I thought, I'd never done that as a cool thingy, but I've used it for all sorts of things, and I really ought to. And it is for these serious geeks. It's a piece of software called Gparted, which I'm sure those of you that build PCs or install operating systems are probably well aware of it. But it's a piece of software that allows you to partition your hard drive so you can have multiple multiple operating systems on it, or whatever else you might want to do with a hard drive on your PC or your laptop, or even, as I found out, for actually dealing with SD cards, which really surprised me. I had a problem with an SD card recently, and I thought, well, okay, I don't know what else to try, so I'll try Dparted on it, and it did the job nicely. So great piece of software, but it is seriously geeky, so you have to understand about partitions and all sorts of things like that on hard drives and stuff, which is good.
I know all about this area, yes. It's fantastic, isn't it?
It is, and the great thing is, which I didn't know until I actually went to the site tonight, there's actually a live boot version, so you can install it on a USB stick or a CD and boot into that, which will enable you to do stuff without even affecting your hard drive. If you just want to have a look and see what's going on, or repartition it without doing too much damage.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. There's a PC version called EAUS Personal, which does a very similar thing. If you're a Windows user, so go and have a look at that as well.
Yeah, the great thing about it is if you run the live boot version is that even if you've got Windows, you can just install this onto a USB stick, boot from the USB stick, and away you go. You don't even need to touch the operating system underneath it, which is great, especially if you want to repartition the existing partition, maybe where you've got Windows 7 on there and you want to add another OS. Although, to be honest, if you put Linux on it, it will actually do that for you anyway, because Dparted is normally built into that. But it's at gparted.org if anyone's interested. That's gparted.org.
And that's Help Show and Big Show all rolled into one.
You know how to do it. And I suspect I might be using that tomorrow because I'm helping my nephew build his first PC tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Oh, really? Well, yes. In Linux?
Well, it will be. He's ordered all the bits and he's bringing them here tomorrow and we're going to build it. So we're going to have fun. So I suspect
that's awesome.
Teaching him how to do that.
That'll be Mint, will it?
Yes, if I have anything to say about it, it will be Linux Mint. Yeah.
I know you know, Sarah. That's the best distro, isn't it?
It's my favourite one, and I use it for all my VMs and as the host OS on most of my PCs. The only exception is this little netbook here, which is hosting my Google Hangout session at the moment.
What are you running on there?
Windows 7.
There you go.
The only reason I'm using it is because I needed something separate so that I can do things. This is what the way I do things in England as well. Yeah. And I use that purely as the communications tool. So and whether you, it's Google Hangouts or Skype.
And you answered a Mac question on the Help Show last week.
I did.
You are multi.
I know. And I made the show title as well, which I was impressed about as well.
You are multi-OS. You are.
I know.
What we need. Mr. Pitzer, have you got a cool thing for us?
A cool thing? Are you looking for hardware or software? Or
whatever you like, sir. Anything you think is cool.
It could be a website. It could be anything you think is cool.
It could be an iPad accessory.
Any particular one you've got in mind, Jeff?
No. Nothing in particular.
This wouldn't be my pick for today, but I really am. I'm just fascinated by my weather app on the iPhone right now, and being able to see exactly how close to death I'm getting on a near minutely basis. What I've gotten the more use out of this past week, though, is actually a piece of software. It's an app called ArcSoft Photo Plus. I use a Macintosh. I shoot with a DSLR. I will bring SD card and plug it into the Mac, and before I found ArcSoft, I would either have to use the photo app that comes with the Mac or some other piece of cumbersome tech. ArcSoft is really great. You can just open up a folder and it gives you a panoramic view of just the photos that are on it, and it's very quick, very easy to select which photos I want to manipulate, save them for editing in another program, or batch resolve a bunch of photos over to JPEGs from the raw files. Very, very useful in my reporting work. I can process, 1,000 photographs in about half an hour and get a really good batch of photos that I want to use.
That's awesome. Thank you. Where is that? You got a link for that, sir? Because that sounds amazing.
ArcSoft Photo Plus. I can probably find the App Store link for that. I'm not sure if it's available for Windows as well, but it's an app.
Okay. Though I'm a multi-OS guy, he said to me, I will have a go. That says amazing. Just because I know you're on a timer, Jeff, you got a cool thing for me, sir?
Of course I do.
Of course you do. You always do. And it's the cleaning utility for the flashlight.
Yes, it is. No, actually, this is from Lego. This is their latest ideas kit. This
is, no! Don't do this to me.
So check this out. This is
the that Lego. Looks like the Ghostbusters.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Ecto-1 from Ghostbusters. And there you go. There's a nice little front view for you. See, even the license plate on it.
That is cool.
No.
And if you notice... And I'll get this close to the camera. Hopefully it'll stay in focus for you. Not stickers. That's actually printed on the Legos. Check out the level of detail that they put in the gear thing on the top. You have the ladder coming down the side. And they even designed this so that the top can pop off. And then you can look inside.
Oh,
and so there's a rack in the back to hold your proton packs. And but wait, Paul, I'm about to make you spend more money.
No,
also comes all of the Ghostbusters.
No, see,
and they're wearing their proton packs.
Cool. See,
I've got to talk to my accountant now, the wife, to release funds to go and get one of those now.
You said you were teched out, mate.
It's this is okay. Lego gets by on a technicality. So you're okay bringing more Lego bricks into the house. This is $50 for the whole kit, and not only does it look cool, building it was so much fun because it's so clear that the Lego engineers really put a lot of thought into how to put this together. So it was like each page as I'm turning to build the next section, there was another delightful surprise in how they came up with a clever way to make pieces fit together so that we'd end up with the car like this. It was a really fun build, and at $50 it was so worth it.
It
even comes with a brick splitter because, you know, you can never have enough Lego brick splitters.
A brick.
And what's $50 is like $2, two British pounds. So
here's your lesson for the day. So
yeah, what is that?
This lets you pull apart Lego bricks that would otherwise be stuck together. So here's a little Lego thing that I have sitting here, and let's say that this brick right here is stuck and you can't get it off. No problem. You just take the brick splitter, and it just pops it off for you.
Well, so I haven't got to lose any fingernails anymore.
That's what I was thinking.
Right. Right. And see, and then on the other end, it has the wedge. So if you need to get in and pop bricks out like that. Oh, you couldn't see it. Pop bricks apart. You can wedge them apart. And if you have bricks that you need to push out from a center post, well, there you go. Now you've got that too.
Sarah, back me up. We do not have brick splitters, do we?
No, I wish we had. I'd save my blooming fingernails. Not that I'd do it now, but certainly when I was a kid, I did.
Oh my God! We've been amazed. I've lost money, and we've been educated.
Mm.
Jeff, you always amaze, sir.
Hey, you know,
kids today have it so easy with Lego bricks.
That's
I'm not going to complain. I actually keep two brick splitters handy all the time You can pop bricks apart in different ways you can't get by in the Lego world without having at least one brick splitter, and you should always have two.
We don't even have one in this country. That is quite amazing, and
it's like you're living in a barbaric back world. I don't know how you get by.
If you'd had brick splitters, back in the 1700s, we may not be celebrating American Independence Day tomorrow.
I
think that's a really good point.
Yeah. Right. No one tell my wife. I have a secret tin here. Shh. Has all my credit cards in them. I will do something before I go back into the living room.
Oh,
tonight.
Dear.
So if you see divorce papers on Twitter, you'll know why. It's Mr. Gammer's fault. I over-teched. That's it. There you go. That's amazing, sir. Thank you ever so much.
Of course.
And you always are. Mr. Streak Machine, you're always going to impress us, aren't you?
Well, I don't think I will after that awesome show of Lego coolness and utility.
Zander.
Almost.
Oh dear, is my audio messed up again?
Not quite.
Just me.
You scared me there again. Anyways, I stumbled across a nice little article over on our pals at Ars Technical earlier about FreeDOS, and I was remembered about this nifty little project that's apparently celebrating its 20th anniversary. I had no idea it's been around for that long. But it's an open source implementation, 100% compatible with the good old MS-DOS of yore, so we could get some DOS fun in our lives again, turning an ancient computer into a web server or smacking it into a virtual machine and playing our old favorite DOS games once more. We're just reliving the past. Why not?
And what is your favorite DOS game of the past?
That's a tough one, actually. There's so many really great titles, I would say.
Elite.
What was the one where the gorilla threw the bananas?
Oh, right. That was actually came with QBasic, if I'm not mistaken. I think it was just called Gorillas or something in that version.
Yeah, something like that.
Have you got a link for that, sir, in the chat room?
I think it's freedos.org, but yes, freedos.org.
Freedos.org.
That should be their official site.
Although I do have a set of DOS disks at work, so I could always give it a go.
I haven't really tried, now that you mention it, the DOS version of Elite. I don't think I've tried that one. Tried a few others, but not the DOS version.
I'm just trying to sound clever. But that is... Oh, yeah, it is. Oh, my word. That is properly... that's probably old school, isn't it? I remember this, and I tried to forget it, because I don't want to think that I'm that old, but I remember that. So that is probably awesome. Is that an emulator, is it?
No, it's a real fully functional DOS operating system, so you can install it on real hardware if you want, fully operational. And it just has some more modern components to it compared to the old MS-DOS, which hasn't been developed since 6.22, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct, yes. That was the last version.
Yeah.
See, you always make me feel my age with Game Boys and DOS and all that sort of thing. I'm thinking, Jesus Christ, 40's approaching, and I'm remembering how old I am. But thank you very so much, anyway. Well, thank you, everyone. It's been a fantastic show. I hope you've enjoyed putting up with me. And the last thing to say is, where can we get hold of you? Sarah?
Yes, probably the best place is on the Twitters, at SarahJaneUK.
Fantastic. Mr. Pitts, where can we find you, sir? You've got a site as well, haven't you?
Yeah, you could try falsegravity.com. That's my personal site. I'll be writing on a number of websites starting this week. So those stories should be coming out soon, but I'll have a link to everything I do from now on at falsegravity.com and at Twitter, at Russ Pitts.
Fantastic. And we'd love to have you back again, sir, in the future, if you'd have us.
I'd love to, and I'll come prepared this time. I will bring cool stuff. Probably not as cool as the Fleshlight iPad case, but I'll do my best.
The bar has been set.
Yeah, that's pretty high. That's way
and
up there.
And the Lego bricks and the Lego brick break as well.
Yeah, I do have a souvenir Spider-Man from the Broadway show, Spider-Man: Turn Off the Dark.
Oh my God, that's awesome!
So yeah, I don't know if that qualifies, but
no, also, no that's so cool. Somewhere.
It's proper nerd, isn't it? We are proper. Yeah. The fact that immediately we all go, oh, yeah, that's amazing.
I'll have to bring my knight who says knee some other time. I can't seem to find
him. Oh, yes, absolutely. You totally rocked it today. The Spider-Man from the Cursed musical, you have your X-Wing pilots.
Oh yeah, they've not been in the show. So are they to have?
Not been in the show yet. Oh, it's Wedge and Biggs.
12-inch collectible figures here with the helmets and the little skirts. Yeah, now they're in the show. Yeah. They're gonna be me for the rest of the show because they're better. They're cooler than I.
Yeah, we are so meeting up for some sort of nerd show one day. I promise we'll all go together. And we can just spend all day just going, oh, can't we?
I'll set up the camera over by my Lego shelf.
Is not the camera that the ladies are asking?
Check out that mustache.
Oh yeah. See that's a serious mustache. That mustache means business. It means I'll take down your Death Star.
Yeah, I'm trying. Oh, there you go. I'm nearly there.
I got your six, Luke.
Red leader.
Yeah.
Stay on target.
Stay on it.
Luke, pull out. Pull out, Luke.
Yeah. No. Enough about the fleshlight, please. Blimey. Oh, I thought we left that one. Oh. Mr. Streak Machine, where can we find you, sir?
I can be located at streakmachine.com, and that will lead to all my other online ventures.
And
before you even get really upset with me, I should probably mention that I also have a book out, and you can find all information about that on the website. You can just click your way there, and you can even purchase it, and all that usual fun jazz.
Fantastic. And I haven't forgotten anyone, have I? I can always forget something. It's just me left, isn't it?
No, I'm still here.
I fear that the audio is breaking up so much now that I cannot hear anything.
I will just sign off. You can find me at Paulins on Twitter. You can find me here on the Big Show and the Help Show, and dotting around the British Tech Network doing reviews and stuff, and at the Bash in about a week and a half time. So thank you everyone for standing in with me, and see you all later from Norwich. Bye.